Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
The NBA championship runs through Philly.
Pope.
Muy bueno.
Rooster.
Talk about the Lucky Sperm Club.
Milk. And Bison.
Posthumously.
Oh, hey, Rooster.
House, how are you? Welcome, fans, to episode 221. Tonight's SMQB's podcast is brought to you by Assembly, the number one name in law firm case management software, digital law marketing for law firms in need of a great company to do your website and digital marketing. This firm stands head and shoulders above everybody else we've tested out there over the years. And Injury Board, the most exclusive plaintiff law firm networking group out there. House, how have you been? We haven't seen you a lot lately. You've been in trials. We missed you.
I was tucked away in St. Louis for a little while. For our St. Louis listeners, enjoy it there. I'm happy to be back in Philly.
House kicks some butt. I'll say it for him. He kicks some butt.
Thanks, brother.
So I'm going to move along to the who are you going to take to the bar segment, where we talk about some people in the sports world we'd like to have a drink with and have an informal chat. Who are you taking to the bar this week, House?
Rooster, I'm going to take the two Sams to the bar. I'm taking Sam Hinkie, the former general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, who couldn't quite get the process right, and Sam Presti, the general manager and now NBA champion and architect of the Oklahoma City Thunder. We're going to talk about that tonight, but what Presti did in assembling that team is unbelievable. It is, you go across sports and GMs and building a team, and when you look and see how he went about doing acquiring assets and what he did, man, I got to buy that guy a drink and say, you put together something that's an all-timer in terms of putting together a championship team.
You mean like as opposed to sending five first-round draft picks for Mikal Bridges, what the Knicks did?
Yeah, like the Knicks, yeah. Or four first-round picks for Desmond Bane. Like, well, we'll talk about this because this is exactly – Sam Presti was on the other side that rooked the L.A. Clippers and got himself a championship.
Yep. I'm taking to the bar Kathy Engelbert. You know who she is?
No, who's that?
She's the commissioner of the WNBA, has been since 2019, and was a former CEO and former accountant for Deloitte U.S., formerly they used to call them the Big Eight and all that, you know, big mm-hmm. accounting firm, international. I just want to take a measure of her before we get to this segment where I dump all over what's going on in the WNBA right now. But before that, let's have a little NBA free-for-all. We're at the end of the season. The finals are over. OKC is the champion in an amazing seven-game series. I think there's two things that are true at once in this. The loss of Halliburton was huge and sad for the Pacers. And at the same time, OKC deserved that championship. They built that team, like you say, into a championship team. And, they are just a better team than everyone else this year. But I just want to start out by mentioning what I think the Pacers lost when Halliburton went down. A lot of people think, oh, they lost this Steph Curry-esque shooting that he unleashes at times. Mm-hmm. And he, sure enough, in the first 7 minutes of the game, he was stepping back, way back behind the three-point line and swishing threes. And it looked like he was going to have one of those nights. But I think the Pacers can win without that kind of shooting from him if others get hot. What they really miss from him is he's an intelligent, really intelligent floor leader. He's the brains of that team. And so when OKC puts on their press – that they ran, you know, they're suffocating defense. It's Halliburton who kind of figures out how to beat that and make it less effective. And it wasn't that effective at times when Halliburton was in the game. And the other thing he figures out how to do is sort of guide the defense when OKC puts in the Twin Towers. I mean, he's like a coach on the court. I think they really miss that. And you notice that when the third period started, OKC just suffocated the Pacers on defense, and they didn't have Halliburton to deal with it. So you could tell the game was going to turn real fast right then. But you want to talk about the Sam Presti and the amazing job he and the ownership did building this OKC team. And they've got a first round pick coming up Wednesday night, in addition to everything they already have.
They have first round picks going for a while now. I mean, the process, as the Sixers and Sam Hinkie took a lot of criticism, was for tanking and seeing what you could do when you stockpile a bunch of picks. And if you get the picks right, you get yourself a championship. And like I said, when we did the bar segment, Hinkie didn't pull that off. When you look back at what the Oklahoma City Thunder had, I mean, if you think about, if you just took somebody that didn't know a lot about NBA and said, I'm going to tell you which team is going to win an NBA championship. One has Paul George, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden at times on that team. Okay. And then one has, you know, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Lou Dort, Cason Wallace, Alex Caruso. You would never, you'd be like, okay, one of those teams has 60 wins. One of those teams might have 45 wins. What Sam Presti did was he realized, you know, you basically sell high. You got rid of Paul George in 2019. And I mean, by now, that trade is legendary. Let's just talk about what that trade looked like. Paul George was traded from Oklahoma City to the Clippers. And in return, they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, and the Clippers 22, 24, 26 first-round pick, Miami's first-round pick, Miami's 2023 first-round pick protected, and another two picks, so two first-round picks. So in the end, that ended up being seven first-round picks and SGA for Paul George. And we all know how that has played out over time. But not only that, they had a pretty decent coach. And they were rolling along pretty well for a while with Billy Donovan and stuff like that. And they brought this guy who had, trained a little bit under Calhoun at Connecticut and Donovan down at Florida. And this guy, Mark Dagnall. It looks like it's Daniel, but Mark Dagnall in 2020. And from there, they just built the team. A lot of people question whether when they took a kid who was like 7'6", who was 150 pounds soaking wet, Chet Holmgren, second behind Paolo Banchero in the 2022 draft. Was that going to be, was that going to work out? But they built Holmgren and Williams in the 22 draft. Of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the 2019 offseason, Lou Dort in the 2019 offseason. And they built it little by little. And if you watched last night in the trophy presentation, the theme of this team, besides the fact of just how well-spoken and smart and focused on the things that matter, they were young and supportive of one another. When Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got the finals MVP trophy, I mean, this guy has had one of the most remarkable seasons. I mean, just by stats, one of the most remarkable NBA seasons in all time. And the guy goes, you know what? This MVP trophy really belongs to Jalen Williams just as much as it does to me. There's nothing like it. And he handed the trophy over to him, made Jalen Williams hold that trophy up. How many NBA players do that when they get a finals MVP?
Right. And the other thing is they hold themselves accountable. So Jalen Williams went off and had this fantastic game. And when he was interviewed about it, all he talked about was how he underperformed.
Yep.
In the game before and how he vowed to get better. They're young. I predict Jalen Williams particularly is going to take some big jumps forward next year because he's not happy with his the consistency of his performance. He knows how good he can be based on that 40-point game or whatever it was, but he's not happy not being able to do that every game. And he struggled in the first half of last night's game. I think he's going to work his ass off and get really good.
Yeah, I'm betting on Jalen Williams too. You talked about the second half of that game, and you know, of course, Halliburton was missing, but the clampdown defense that Oklahoma City put on in the second half, and a large part of that was none other than the young Alex Caruso. I mean, how about this guy? Getting him in the offseason, realizing, you know, there's always that little missing piece, that gym rat type player who can, you know, drain threes, drive, play good defense. It was kind of fun to watch last night, like unsung players like Alex Caruso and TJ McConnell, Basically in a lot of ways mirror images of one another, just go at it.
And don't forget Hartenstein. That was a hell of an addition to that team.
Perfect. Just perfect.
Imagine if they now can go out and either draft or get a guy who's 40% from the three-point line instead of 30% like most of the guys on their team. What a great team that would be, right? If they had somebody who could come in like Dante DiVincenzo a couple years ago for the Knicks. I mean, they don't have that right now. They have guys who are hot or super cold. They don't have the guy who's just consistently hitting those wide-open threes. And they need that.
They've got a lot of opportunity. This whole NBA playoffs was a lot of kind of woulda, coulda, shoulda, including impossible shots that went down, like Halliburton's shot went down against the Knicks, like Jason Tatum going down. You know, I had a discussion this morning with one of my kids saying, if the Celtics stay healthy and you put a finals between the Thunder and the Celtics, who wins that? And we both agreed it was a healthy Celtics, I think, win that series. I don't know. I think it would have been a really good series. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, woulda, coulda, shoulda. I don't know what happens if Halliburton stays in that game. Yeah, he's raining down threes at the beginning of the game. Yeah, he's a special player, but I agree with you. I think what OKC did at home, putting on that defense, shooting the ball pretty well. They had a little dry spell in the fourth quarter, but I think they win that game even with Halliburton in. It's a real, real shame. But I don't want to move off the championship without talking for a second about this unique year that, first of all, statistically, there's only been four players ever who had, since the MVP was invented by the NBA in 55-56, who had a scoring title, NBA MVP, and an NBA title in the same year. That would be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, MJ, who actually did that four times, and SGA. That's some pretty heady company right there.
Some Mount Rushmore company right there. SGA looks like he could be the face of the league for the near future. What about the team? Do you see this team repeating and being a 3-4 time champion?
I mean, it's hard to say that when you think about what were the potential challenges out there in the West between the Clippers and the Lakers and the Nuggets and, you know, the Houston Rockets. It's hard to say that one of them is right on the cusp. I do think the Rockets are going to be even better next year. Katie is the perfect fit to add to that team. But, you know, the Nuggets, if they're healthy, you still can't write off an NBA champion with a three-time MVP in Jokic. So I don't, you're always going to have, as long as that core three is together, you're going to have the Nuggets. You're going to have an improving Rockets team. We'll see what the Lakers do in the offseason. I think this Oklahoma City team is special. They're only going to get better. Like you said, Jalen Williams is going to improve. Kaysen Wallace is going to improve. Some of these young guys are going to improve. Chet Holmgren didn't even have a healthy season. Like, what if that guy gives you a full healthy season?
Right.
So I think they are the favorites. But what I want to ask you, Rooster, unfortunately, because this injury and Halliburton is now down and out for a year. Tatum is now down and out for the year.
Dame Lillard is down and out.
Dame Lillard. What is the story in the East next year? Who could face the potential run it back Thunder on the other side in the Eastern Conference?
The teams I think that have the potential to do that are Cleveland, if they get their act back together like they had it together all season long. I think they can do that. They were the best team in the NBA for a good part of the season. The Orlando Magic are a good, really good team, and they've picked up some good players recently. The Knicks, you know, were a game away from being in the finals, the Eastern Conference Finals, I mean, right? And then the Sixers. If Embiid is healthy and the Sixers have your new young player that's so good.
Maxi McCain, yep.
And Maxi, that team can always be good. It all comes down to the health of Embiid. I mean, I really hope you unload Paul George. He's never going to be the answer. He's done, right? I think he's done. But you need an answer other than Paul George, but that's doable. So those four teams, you know, could do it. We'll see. I think the West, though, poses the bigger challenge to OKC, like you said, with Houston, and eventually the Spurs with Wemby and what they're building. They've got two picks. They've got the number two pick Wednesday night, and I think like 14 to add to that pretty tough a lineup that they have. They've drafted really well lately. Don't forget they got that guy from UConn a couple of years ago who had a great season, and then Wemby. I think they were in the hunt for somebody of KD's caliber, but it just didn't work out. They're gonna be a hot team in a year or two.
Yeah, the Spurs are definitely in the keeper league for buying for futures. I think you're right. They're a year or two away. But if you're waking up this morning in Cleveland or New York, you are feeling a lot of pressure now for the Eastern Conference. I mean, now the coaching decision for the Knicks looms really, really large. I think that job just got actually a lot more attractive because the pathway without Tatum and without Halliburton, there's really a pathway to make it all the way through the East. I think you're right that, you know, between Garland and Mitchell and the center play, the big men in Cleveland, I do right now, just on paper, and given the way they played in the regular season this year, I think Cleveland has the advantage. But the East is going to be fun next year. It's going to be wide, wide open. It's a shame that it is, but it's going to be wide, wide open.
Yep, it sure is. Let's talk about draft night Wednesday night. Whether there's even anyone in this draft, including Cooper Flagg, who can be a major difference maker to one of these teams that we've been talking about, if they happen to land one of these guys. The Mavs are going to take Cooper Flagg. So they'll have, I don't know, are there two stars going to be healthy next year? AD?
Well, if AD and Kyrie, if they're healthy, I mean, this is a really, really good setup for the Mavs not to drop off very long at all. I mean, again, they defy the odds to get this number one pick. Again, I was, you know, with one of my kids talking about the NBA draft, and I was like, you know, I'm not so sure that we should be holding out Cooper Flagg like a Wemby and a difference maker. And he said to me, Dad, you know, when the NBA players assembled for the Olympics and they brought in Cooper Flagg, he just ripped through the NBA players, and they vouched for him. When they were done that practice, they're like, okay, this kid, he's not even really emerged yet as a player in college, and he is NBA ready. So he has played against NBA-level competition getting ready for the Olympics. I still think he's in for a big, big change of pace, but he doesn't have to be the guy. It's not like they're building around him. If AD is healthy and Kyrie's healthy, Cooper Flagg can come into his own. Is he the type that you build a franchise around? Because, you know, AD and Kyrie are getting long in the tooth. Do you build a franchise around Cooper Flagg the way you build around Wemby? I don't know. I'm interested to see it. I don't think there's anyone that's close to him in this draft as a number one pick, but as compared to other number one picks right now, me personally, I think it's a little overrated.
Yeah, I think he's like a 1A.
Yeah. Yeah.
1B. Who do you hope the Sixers get it with a third pick?
Well, there's this whole thing about Ace Bailey. This whole thing has gotten weird. So Ace Bailey, who a lot of people say he has a game like Kevin Durant, he canceled every pre-draft workout with every NBA team. They finally had one lined up for the Sixers, who would likely take him at 3 on Friday. And not long before the workout was to happen, he needed certain guarantees, and he canceled it. And I don't know who's coaching along this kid, but then the next thing they did just to drive the dagger through the Sixers and say, this kid really doesn't want to play here. I think it's tomorrow night, because the draft is Wednesday in Brooklyn. Tomorrow night, Ace Bailey is throwing out the first pitch for the New York Mets. Like, okay, sure, you can still draft them if you're the Sixers, but that, in terms of like endearing yourself to a city that you might end up going to, that's just like dumb.
It's just a huge red flag. I mean, if I'm ownership or management, general manager of a team, I'm going to think long and hard about taking that guy. Just like, you know, the situation the Bengals are dealing with Shamir Smart, who just up and left as a rookie, up and left training camp without telling him where he was going. I mean, the guy thinks he's like, you know, he's like on the Hendrickson level where he can hold out. He's a freaking rookie. And you don't need that kind of a head case as a rookie on your team.
There's a writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer who said the Sixers cannot make the mistake again of bringing in maybe somebody with exquisite talent, but ridiculous immaturity. They made the mistake with Ben Simmons and it cost them years. And frankly, if in his argument, and I actually believe it, I buy into this, Joel Embiid, with all of his talent on the floor, setting aside the injury, he definitely has some immaturity issues. He definitely, just the way he approaches the game mentally, takes nights off, you know, just likes to be a wise guy on social media. Like, he never really has fully grown up. And if what we're seeing are the signs of something like that in Ace Bailey, that's like, you stay away. I still think the Sixers are going to take him. I think if he's truly a Kevin Durant-like player, I think they're going to take him. If they don't, they'll take this Con Knupel kid from Duke that's a, you know, a deadly shooter. The weird thing for me is these Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper, who are supposedly really the number 2 and 3 picks. It's almost certain that the Spurs will take Dylan Harper at number 2. Why is it that if these two players are the top two of the top players in the whole NBA draft, why is it that Rutgers did nothing with these guys on their team?
Exactly. Why were they at Rutgers in the first place? They must have matured late, right? If they were that good coming out of high school, they wouldn't be playing for Rutgers.
So, I don't know. I think we are going to have a very active trade night because there's such a drop-off after the first 3 picks. And because we saw what just happened last night with the Thunder and stockpiling first-round picks and the process, I think you're going to see a lot of movement in this draft. I'd be surprised if you didn't. I think the first couple picks will hold. I think definitely the Mavs and the Spurs, I think, will stay where they are and will take Flagg and Harper. And then after that, I think the Sixers might try to trade down. There's rumors that maybe they can move Paul George to the Jazz and give the Jazz the number 3 pick and drop down a little bit and still get, you know, a player that can help them next year. But look for a very, very active trading floor Wednesday night.
You know, speaking of your first point, that there may not be any superstar level people after Cooper Flagg in this draft, but there are some good players, and there's some very good players who are projected to go late in the first round, like 24, 25-ish. And that's when teams like the Thunder, like the Magic, are picking. The Thunder picked 24th, and the Magic picked 25th. And like Walter Clayton from Florida is projected to be available at mm-hmm. that point. Mm-hmm. Same with Liam McNeely, the freshman from UConn, whose whole career path sort of resembles Cooper Flagg's about a year behind. You know, I think they played at the same high school together when they both transferred to this private basketball high school.
Do you remember that really nice tournament last year that that kid Derek Queen had from Maryland?
Yes, yes.
So there's a guy that's probably going to play the four in the NBA. He's around 6'9". Because of the way this NBA playoffs has played out, the Miami Heat had to give up their first round pick to the Thunder. So the Thunder are actually picking at 15. Like, could you imagine if this Thunder team picks up Derek Queen at number 15 to play a position they could use a little bit of depth to the number four? That would just be crazy. So yeah, you're right. There could definitely be some gold late in that first round.
Yeah, but you're not going to see any superstars. I agree. I'm not even sure Flagg's a superstar, but I think you're going to get teams plugging some good holes with some of these guys. How much of a power shift do you think has occurred in the West with the KD trade to Houston?
Well, I can say this. For me, you can scratch off the Suns. I mean,
they're in a rebuild. They must be in a rebuild with that move, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, some people say that, okay, Jalen Green's a really nice pickup.
Yeah.
Jalen Green and
Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, like not doing it for me. So, you know, in the West, I think Houston, who finished number two, I think they're right there. The Lakers with 50 wins. We'll see what kind of conditioning and commitment Luka has for next year. You know, if Luka is the healthy Luka of the past, that's where I think your top three are. And of course, let's not forget about how far along the T-Wolves came.
Yeah,
I think, you know, Anthony Edwards is still, other than SGA, I think he's one of the future faces, the current face of the NBA. If the T-Wolves pick up a little bit more offense there, I think they're a strong defensive team. If they pick up a little bit more offense, the T-Wolves. But I think the Rockets moved up to really being right behind the Thunder with the KD. I know he's had some injuries. I know he's a little longer in the tooth. The guy still had 20-something points per year. Per game this year.
The Rockets also signed to a three-year deal Steven Adams, you know, the center. So they got Steven Adams and KD to go along with Amen Thompson, Sengun, Jabari Smith, and Fred Van Vliet in the starting lineup. And then they've got Tari Eason, who is a star in the making. And then they've got these two young guys they drafted in recent years who are supposedly great players and can't even get on the court, Reed Shepard and Cam Whitmore. I mean, that is a good, solid team right there with one of the best coaches in the NBA.
Yeah, with Udoka, it reminds me a lot of the Thunder building a young team. And if KD plays the experienced, sniper, shooter, and can give even half to three quarters of the classic KD, the Rockets are going to be really, really dangerous. Now, that said, people thought when they assembled the Suns team with KD, you know, just hand them the championship. So we'll see. We'll see. But I do agree that the Houston was right there knocking on the door. I think they're even closer. The Houston OKC, particularly because the teams are young, this should be a nice real good rivalry for the West for a while.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to next season. I think it'll be fun. It'll be a fresh new set of rivalries being developed. Let's stick with basketball. I don't mean to skip over the Panthers winning the Stanley Cup, but that was kind of long enough ago, so I think it's been talked about to death. Unless you feel like talking about your thoughts on the Panthers.
Nothing other than I think if this was one of the major six teams, like if this was a Boston or a Rangers or Canadians or a Red Wings or a Blackhawks, a team like that in one of the major metropolitan, I think we'd really be talking about a dynasty. The similar thing happened when the Lightning were so dominant. I think there wasn't as much juice about it because they were in Florida and we don't really always associate hockey with Florida. The Florida Panthers, this team, they've been knocking on the door for a while before the last two championships, and now they won two championships in a row. They've got a Hall of Fame goalie. The moves that they made to bring on Marchand late was brilliant. They've got incredible balanced scoring. I think that this team, because we talked about the dynasties that we've had over the last several years in the NHL, one of them being the Lightning. I think now we need to put the Panthers in that same, kind of that same group. And that's really it. Congrats to the Panthers. It's a shame Canada's gonna get off the schneid eventually. And now the last postscript about the NHL is Edmonton capable and willing to dish out what they're going to need to keep Connor McDavid? Because you talk about a shift in power in professional sports. If they don't have the money to keep Connor McDavid, wherever he lands is automatically a Stanley Cup contender. So that'll be a big thing to watch in the offseason. Does Edmonton put it all together to keep McDavid happy?
We may have to revisit Bison's point about Florida with no income tax attracting all these NHL players.
True.
And it's hard to compete with that when you're in Canada with higher taxes than any state in the U.S. That's a problem. Well, let's get back to basketball, and I want to talk a little bit about women's basketball. I know you've heard me say this in the past, but I first started watching the WNBA because a lot of the UConn women started going in. And then I noticed that some real knowledgeable basketball people like Bill Bradley, who played for the Knicks and became a senator, U.S. senator, was at a lot of games. And he was interviewed and asked, why are you going to all these games? And he said, I love the WNBA because they don't really dunk and they don't go 1-on-5. They play old-fashioned team basketball. They pass. They pass like the Bulls used to pass when they ran the triangle. And he said, I just love watching that kind of basketball. We've gone from that in the WNBA to what I think is akin to this professional wrestling, WWE style promotion of the sport. They've gotten a hold of this, phenomenal money-making superstar, Caitlin Clark. And instead of just like, being in awe of her game, it seems to me that the WNBA has decided we can make some serious money by setting this up WWE style, where she is the white hat wearing heroine and a series of heels beat the crap out of her. And, we've seen that play out. And then, fortuitous that the blonde-haired beauty Sophia Cunningham comes in as her savior and enforcer. I mean, the whole thing is just set up like a frickin' professional wrestling drama, complete with black versus white and Angel Reese as the foil, which I think is disgusting because I do think there's a racial component to that, and they're just playing on the fans' worst impulses with that kind of constant playing of this on social media. And if you notice, the refs stand there like statues and don't call any of this stuff until it's completely out of hand. So that can't be a coincidence in my view. What do you think about that? Am I overreacting?
I don't know. I'll say that what you're saying has some logic to it. If they've really orchestrated this to bring attention, and I don't even know if it's translating into ratings, but there's no doubt about it that there's a lot more attention to the WNBA. So this much I know is true. There was always going to be more attention to the WNBA when they brought in Caitlin Clark. She's a transformational player for that sport. There already was in the women's college basketball March Madness, there already was a little bit of a rivalry and a little bit of testiness that had developed between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. And unfortunately, I do agree with you, that was pitted in some ways as a little bit of this racial divide. I also think that it's true, you made a good point, that some of this has been ratcheted up because of social media. Like, you know, now you get the 30-second clips. Part of kind of what disgusts me a little bit is there's a lot of social media now on what are the sexy pregame outfits that these women are walking into the locker room with. Like that's how they're selling the sport. Like, just how high are the skirts? How long are the now maybe some of these women are liking and say, I'm not just a professional athlete, I'm a beautiful woman, but I'm noticing a lot more pregame attention to these women before the games. And I think what the WNBA is trying to sell is not just these young players that are exciting, but I think they know sex sells and they're trying to do sexiness. That to me is standing out. Like, why are we seeing so much of these pregame fits of these women before they go into games?
Right. Well, the other thing is this. Angel Reese does not belong in the same conversation with Caitlin Clark. She's just not nearly as good a player. Caitlin Clark isn't the best player in the WNBA. Asia Wilson is. Mm-hmm. This woman, who also happens to be beautiful, is a two-time champion, a three-time finals MVP, a three-time WNBA MVP. She was the number one pick in 2018 and has been a six-time All-Star. And you never hear about her anymore because she doesn't fit this drama that they've set up of, you know, beating up on Caitlin Clark and then retaliation. The social media has gone nuts with Angel. The haters out there on Angel Reese are incredible. Because on the one hand, they're right. She's just not as good. But on the other hand, they hate her so much that it's gotten ugly. And I just think the league is good with it. I think the league just loves, you know, any pub is good pub at this point for them. And so Sophia Cunningham picked up a half a million followers just for throwing someone down to the floor after that woman from the Connecticut Sun poked Caitlin Clark in the eyes intentionally and then went over to the bench and did a little dance and laughed about it. And the league didn't fine her. There's no ramifications for any of this.
Well, here's what I know. We're on episode 221, and there's no way that the SMQBs have ever spent this much time going over what is transpiring in the WNBA. So they're doing something right.
They are.
They're bringing attention to the sport. And maybe some of it is going to be a little distasteful. Some of it is going to seem like it's a little contrived, but people are paying attention to it, and Caitlin Clark is growing the sport. And rivalries are being created, and hopefully some of the ugly parts of it, like objectification and racial issues, are going to fade, and we're going to focus on the court talent. But they're building a product. They are definitely building a product. We're talking about it.
There's some great players in that league that we should be talking about who were not, like Paige Beckers. But I don't know. I'm just disappointed. I think it's a little disgusting what they're doing, but I'm with you. Hopefully it'll all shake out and it'll all be for the better. We're coming up on the MLB All-Star break month. And, for the most part, things have been shaking out the way we all predicted, mm-hmm. with the exception of my pick that the Yankees would finish third or fourth in the AL East, my team, and that the Red Sox would finish first. I got that one wrong, but everything else has been pretty much what we thought would happen. There are some couple of young players that you guys have been talking about lately. Frankly, I don't know a damn thing about. Who are Cal Raleigh and Jacob Mizorowski, and why should MLB fans care?
I would guess that, again, on this pod, other than our great catcher, Bison, maybe he had heard of Cal Raleigh, but nobody in the universe outside of Seattle had heard of him. This guy is 28 years old and is having a beyond epic season for all players, let alone catchers. He's breaking records left and right. He's at 31 home runs before the All-Star break. He is the first, by the way, he is a switch hitter. He's the first switch hitter to have 30 home runs or more before the All-Star break. The fastest to 30 home runs in 75 games since one Barry Bonds in 2001. And the fastest to 30 home runs for the Seattle Mariners ever, other than Ken Griffey, who were at 32 about, 30 years ago. Beyond that, the guy is a very, very solid catcher. He actually has a little bit of speed, and he's making – like, we don't – I don't remember paying this much attention to a catcher really Pudge, but Piazza was like – Piazza was like this. I mean, Piazza was such an offensive juggernaut. Again, Seattle Mariners are not going to be on, the front page of the sports news every day. But Cal Raleigh, I think we're now going to be having a Cal Raleigh watch, really, for the rest of the year to see how close does he get to 60 home runs. And by the way, in the AL MVP race, If we're being objective about it, Cal Raleigh is heads and shoulders above Aaron Judge right now. The Aaron Judge who was batting 400 for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Mizorowski is, who knows whether we're going to keep talking about this kid. He's a tall, lanky starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers who throws literally a 96-mile-per-hour slider amongst his other repertoire of pitches. He's the first pitcher in Major League Baseball history who had more wins in his first two starts, than hits allowed, one. The guy was unhittable. Maybe the second time around once teams start seeing him, this guy, what's really, really fun, what's happening right now in baseball, is that you got these great young pitchers coming up, and the Major League Baseball and its fans are in store for a treat. And everybody, set your DVR, set your TV to turn it on Wednesday night. You get Jacob Mizorowski on the Brewers facing Paul Skeens on the Pirates. And if Mizorowski is the real deal like he seems, you might be seeing two of the best pitchers for a long time. Let's keep an eye on him, watch his development, because I think the Brewers got a really, really good one there.
Be exciting. All right. I think we're ready for Punchable Face of the Week.
It's this week's Punchable Face.
House, you have a punch?
I have two punches.
All right. I've got one, so go ahead.
All right. I'm sorry to the New York sports fans, Rooster. I know you're one of them for the Yankees and the Knicks, but I went to a baseball game on Saturday night in this great series that the Phillies and the Mets just had. And the Mets turn out in Philly pretty well. Obviously, it's an easy drive or train ride to come down. They fill the stadium. I just want to say for all sports fans, and by the way, far be it from me to ever criticize sports fans. I am from the city of the most boorish, disgusting sports fans in the world. I'm very proud of our Philly fans. But these New York fans who talk to the players like they're their best friend, I'm like Francisco Lindor comes up. Cisco, let's go, Cisco. Come on, 1-2. Come on, 1-2. Let me tell you something. I was out of my mind. Nobody calls these players by their number. Like, let's go 2-0. Let's go 2-0. Let's see if you can jack one over the fence 2-0. No one says that. These people were so annoying and so, yes, we lost. And yes, I was annoyed by the loss. But you know me, that I think that sports fans can actually affect the outcome on the field. Maybe I'm delusional that way. But the sports fans who themselves are just living in this fantasy world like they're best friends with the players that are on the field and say the most ridiculous stuff, that's my first punch.
You know who else talks like that, who calls players by their number?
Who's that?
Mr. Cliche himself, Russell Wilson. So he will fit in great in New York, apparently.
Oh, my God. I mean, please. Rooster, did you see this college baseball World Series and the second game where LSU clinched? Did you see what happened in the first inning?
You mean with the coach?
Yeah. I don't know the name of this home plate umpire. I should have looked that up before. You cannot. I don't care like how animated. It's one thing if you come out and you start bumping the chest of the umpire. It's one thing if you're, you know, Earl Weavering dust across the home plate. The guy complained that the ump had missed three pitches and was pissed about it and cursed. And the ump had previously said, you know, like, watch your profanity at me. And the ump didn't like that he continued to be profane. And he threw out the coach.
In the first inning.
In the final, come on. Like, you just can't do that. Like, you cannot make the game so much about you as a referee, an umpire, that you change the game in the very first inning. These are kids. These are amateur kids playing baseball. I do think a baseball manager, particularly at the NCAA level, matters. They were already down by one game to LSU. They need to win that game. You take the manager off the bench. And, oh, by the way, when the first base coach chimed in too, they threw him out too for good measure. Please get a hold of yourself. Like, stop. The game is not about you, refs and umps. For the officiating crew, for the ump crew that had the final game of the College World Series, you marred that outcome by throwing out the Coastal Carolina coach, and you've earned a punch of the week.
I've got a milk slap. I just want to warn the Pittsburgh Steelers and their fans, here's what you're getting when you sign Aaron Rodgers. He just had some unhinged rant where he proceeded to say all kinds of crazy stuff, including blaming his failures last year with the Jets on their running game, throwing the running backs under the bus. I mean, oh, dude, you're just not that good anymore. Just face it. You're not that good. Stop blaming it on everybody else. It's embarrassing. Anyway, how about a lasso? Fans, if you haven't heard us before, we do a lasso to try to bring out some of the Ted Lasso aspects of sports, where we focus on things that are heartwarming and maybe shine a little light on the world through sports. And lately, we've had a hard time coming up with any. Do you have one, House?
Yeah, I got one. Okay. The same heartache that I was given by some Mets fans Saturday night did not trump the experience that I had of a lasso moment when I got a chance to sit at that game with Sam and Gary Zeff. Gary Zeff is a lifelong Phillies fan. He just eats, sleeps, breathes baseball. And he's struggling right now with cancer. And he's trying to get through it. And he's got a kid, and Sam, his son, who is right by dad's side, really trying to do everything that can heal dad in every possible way. And Sam, the son, reached out to a ticket exchange to see if there was any way he could make his dad's dream come true to see the Phillies against the Mets up close. And that landed in my law firm's inbox. They heard about that. And they made those tickets available to Sam and Gary Zeff. And, you know, the lasso isn't so much about, a nice, generous thing that our firm did. The lasso is really for what Sam and Gary Zeff did in that father-son moment for that baseball game, the game of baseball, and what the Phillies did. Because once the Phillies knew about this story, they brought Sam and his dad out to batting practice, onto the field. He got a chance to meet Bryce Harper. He got a chance to meet Kyle Schwarber. The Phillies filled him up with a whole bunch of swag and gave him, you know, the dream of a lifetime. And I just, that's what we look for in a lasso, is when, you know, sports can bring out like the better angels in a situation like that. Really tip my hat and our hat at the SMQBs to the Phillies for making the dream come true for Sam and Gary Zeff. Continue to fight through it, Gary. Get better. And you guys, on top of your special trip to the Phils Saturday night, you got one more little thing to add to your swag bag, which is a SMQB lasso this week.
You know, you didn't say it, but I'm going to say it. I know that the principals that in your firm were looking forward to going to that game. And it is a really nice gesture. They were fabulous seats too, by the way, from the law firm of Klein and Spector in Philadelphia. And, you know, that's the kind of things they do. And as a fellow attorney, I really appreciate that. Now, let's wrap it up with some buzzer beaters. I've got one.
Tell me, Richard, what you got?
This is right up your alley, House. It's really bad news for the Premier League and Crystal Palace. The European Soccer League. The owner of Crystal Palace has just announced that he is selling the team to none other than Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets. And so if you want your team to suck in perpetuity, then you should be happy, Crystal Palace fans. Otherwise, this is really bad news for you. Sorry.
Wow, I did not hear that. I thought that I could have sworn that one of the owners or the ownership group of Crystal Palace included the same group of Josh Harris and David Blitzer and some of the other group. So that's that. If they're selling to Woody Johnson, that's crazy. That is crazy. if Woody Johnson's your owner, Crystal Palace, I'm sorry for you. I'm going to stay in the buzzers. Also, in the world of soccer, there used to be a tournament. Of course, we've got the World Cup every 4 years that's among the countries. For a while, FIFA tried to put together a World Cup that was just among the best club teams. And they had limited it to 12 teams for a while, and it didn't really attract a lot of attention. This year, every 4 years, they expanded it to 32 teams. And so the FIFA Club World Cup is going on right now. It includes titans like PSG and Manchester City and Real Madrid and Barca and all these other things. But it also includes some really lesser-known teams, particularly teams from Latin America, Brazil, Argentina. It is a blast. It is very, very good for the game of soccer, particularly because it's being played in the United States. And one of the biggest deals is that for Major League Soccer, they've never really been able to demonstrate that they're on par with the leagues around the world. Well, Inter Miami, which includes, of course, Messi, Inter Miami broke through the other night and has, you know, taken down. They have a win and a draw in their league, which includes, you know, teams from, you know, from Egypt, from Portugal, from Brazil. Inter Miami is holding their own. They're likely to go through the group stage, and that is a big, big deal for Major League Soccer. So keep an eye out. We're almost done the group stage, and then it gets really fun because you're going to see some of the best clubs in the world make their way into the round of 16, the quarters, and the semis, and the finals. It's all playing out in the United States. It's fun to watch. Keep an eye on it.
Good deal. All right. Well, that wraps it up. We look forward to getting the rest of the team back together soon. Milk, Bison, and Pope, good to have you back, House, and we'll see you next week.
Peace out.